to turn to the book of Daniel, chapter 1. Book of Daniel, chapter 1. We'll read the first 8 verses. Daniel 1, verses 1 through verse 8. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem, and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. And the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel, and of the king's seed, and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well favored, and skillful in all wisdom, and cunning in knowledge, and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. Now among these were of the children of Judah Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names. For he gave unto Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah of Shadrach, and to Mishael of Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. These verses set the stage for the book of Daniel. The book of Daniel is a very vivid picture of living in the world, but being set apart for God's use. It is in this book that we read of a people who lived counter the culture and openly served God and were greatly blessed of the Lord. The book of Daniel is a book of right triumphing over wrong, right triumphing over evil. It also illustrates that circumstances do not have to be perfect or even favorable for one to serve the Lord. It is a book that is very relevant to the circumstances of God's people today. It is a book that encourages God's people to be resolute in the service of the Lord. I want to speak this morning on a God-evident life in a God-despising culture. A God-evident life in a God-despising culture. We want to consider 4 things. Number 1, the circumstances that God's people found themselves in. Number 2, we want to see what Daniel did. Number 3, we want to notice the life that Daniel lived. And then number 4, we want to make application to ourselves. But first of all, we see the circumstances that God's people found themselves in. In verse 1, we are told that Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, besieged Judah. The record of this is found in 2 Kings chapter 24, 2 Chronicles chapter 36. According to 2 Kings 24 and verse 14, 10,000 of the most promising of the people were carried into Babylonian exile. Now we're told in verse 2 of our text that not only were these individuals carried off into captivity, but the temple was raided, the temple was ransacked, and the vessels of the temple were taken and placed in the house of an idolatrous god. We read in the book of Ezra, chapter 1, and verse 11, that all the vessels of gold and silver that were taken were 5,400. And all of these are now placed in the house of an idolatrous god. Nebuchadnezzar's plan and intent for these that he took captive was to take the most gifted of the Hebrews, the young men, the handsome, those who showed the most aptitude for every kind of learning, those who were quick to understand. And he wanted to take these individuals and brainwash and re-educate them, transforming them into agents of the Babylonian Empire. And then, as the custom was, he would send them back to their homeland of Judah to govern as loyal subjects of Babylon. The devil does the same thing today. And in our churches today, we have agents of a Babylonian Empire. We have agents of a godless culture. They've been taken captive. They've been brainwashed by a culture. Now, Nebuchadnezzar was smart enough to know that he could not make these Hebrews act and live like Babylonians unless he got them to think like Babylonians. Many today, their thinking is no different than the thinking of the world. Now, to do this, they were taught the ways, the philosophy, and the religion of Babylonian culture. We see in the last part of verse 4, whom they might teach the learning. Nebuchadnezzar knew that he needed to teach them different ways of looking at life. Many of God's people today have adopted the very same methods of looking at life as the world. We see also that they were taught the language of the Chaldeans. The Chaldeans were the politicians. The Chaldeans were the most learned of the day, the most educated of the day. They were taught the language. Many have been taught a new language today. It is the language of political correctness, and many of God's people have learned it and learned it well. And Satan has planted them in his churches. Just as Nebuchadnezzar would eventually send, or his intent was to eventually send these back to Judah. They were also introduced to the luxuries of Babylon. In verse 5, we see that there was appointed to them a daily provision of the king's meat. It just kept coming every day. And of the wine which he drank. And he nourished them this way for 3 years. What he was doing was he was attempting to entice and develop their appetite for these luxuries, to develop their appetite for Babylonian culture. Many today of God's people have developed an appetite for a godless culture. There was an attempt to make them forget their past, to make them forget their country, to make them forget their God, and to lead them to identify with Babylon. In verse 6, we are introduced to four of these captives. There was Daniel, there was Hananiah, there was Mishael, and there was Azariah. We see that the chief of the eunuchs, in order to cause these individuals to identify with Babylon, he changed their names. The name of Daniel, which means God is my judge, was changed to Belteshazzar, meaning Bel's prince. Bel, of course, being the principal god that was worshipped in Babylon. And Daniel's name was changed to Bel's prince. There was Hananiah, meaning the grace and favor of God. And that was changed to Shadrach, the favorite one of the sun god. There was Mishael, whose name meant godlikeness. And his name was changed to Meshach, who was the chief goddess of Babylon. And then there was Azariah. His name meant God my help. His name was changed to Abednego, meaning the servant of the shining light. All of this was done not simply because they didn't like their names. This was done to, in an attempt to get them to identify, to cause them to fit in with Babylonian culture. Now, these Hebrew captives, they were surrounded by heathen worship. They were surrounded by heathen images. They were surrounded by heathen talk. They were surrounded by heathen ways. They were surrounded by heathen people. And there was an all-out effort to bring these Hebrew captives into conformity to a godless, God-despising, idolatrous, blasphemous, immoral, permissive, self-indulgent, self-sufficient culture. There was an all-out attempt to press these individuals into the mold and into the mindset of Babylonian culture. There was an all-out attempt to get them to fit in, to accept and to embrace the ways of Babylonian culture. That brings us to the second point. We're told in verse 8, but Daniel, and I believe as you read on, it was not just Daniel, but also his three friends that we read of there in verse 6. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the king's meat and the wine which he drank. Without a doubt, many of the Israelites who were carried into captivity lost their faith in God and were conformed to Babylonian ways. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. For 3 years, they were indoctrinated in Babylonian thinking. But in spite of the evil intentions, in spite of the intense effort of the enemy, Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. In other words, Daniel made a determination in his heart that he would not be moved from his God, that he would not be moved from the ways of his God. He made this his intention. He made this his aim. He made this his ambition. This became his aspiration, his determination, his resolve, and his commitment that he would not be moved from God, that he would please God and not the culture that surrounded him. But Daniel purposed in his heart, that he would not be blinded by Babylonian culture. He purposed in his heart that he would not be hypnotized by an ungodly culture. Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. That is, it was his resolve that he would not be defined by a culture of wickedness, by a culture of rebellion and idolatry. He would not allow that culture to define his life. Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. He would not allow himself to be swallowed up. He would not allow himself to be consumed by an unbelieving culture. He was determined. He was resolved. He was committed not to allow his affections, not to allow his devotion and his loyalty to God to be turned aside. Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. He was determined. He was resolved. He was committed that he would not sell out. He was committed that he would not bow to peer pressure, that he would not go along with the program of a godless culture. Daniel's own country and homeland, and Daniel at this time would have probably been a teenager. But Daniel, his own country and homeland had been laid waste. And now he's in a land that is antagonistic to his faith. He is living in an evil place. His life has been uprooted. His life has been changed. He is now in the midst of extreme difficulties and troubles. No doubt there was sorrow. No doubt there was heartache and even anguish. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. Now there are several things that Daniel would have had to do to have this kind of purpose. He would have had to believe some things concerning God. He would have never purposed this had he not strongly believed some things concerning God. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. In order to do this, Daniel would have had to define the most important thing in his life. You see, purpose is based upon a deep-seated principle. Purpose is based upon a conviction. Purpose is based upon the realization that something is worthwhile. So Daniel would have had to define his purpose. And I believe that Daniel defined what was most important to him, that being God. And he announced it, and he stood by it. Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. In order to do this, Daniel would have had to recognize that he had a duty to God, and that his duty to God surpassed any duty to man and the government and the ways of man. Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. In order to do this, Daniel would have had to define his identity. You see, because purpose is based upon
what we associate with, and what we connect with, and what we empathize with. And Daniel associated with God, and Daniel connected with God, and Daniel empathized with the ways of God. Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. In order to do this, Daniel would have had to have a strong desire for purity of heart and life, or he would have never made such a purpose. Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile. He would not degrade himself. He would not contaminate himself. He would not dishonor himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. In order to do this, Daniel would have had to realize the dangers of a godless culture. There are many today of God's people who do not realize the dangers of a godless culture. Daniel possessed a deep-seated conviction that Babylonian culture was in opposition to God, and that such a culture would strip him spiritually. So he purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. In order to do this, Daniel would have had to possess a feeling in his heart for God. Within the heart of Daniel was the stirring of the Lord. Within the heart of Daniel, there was agreement with the Lord. Within the heart of Daniel, there was an interest in the Lord. Within the heart of Daniel, there was a reverence for the Lord. Within the heart of Daniel, there was a passion. There was an excitement for the Lord. The Lord meant everything to Daniel. And Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. That brings us to the life that Daniel lived. It was his purpose of heart that enabled Daniel, in the most difficult and heartrending times, and in the midst of a godless and blasphemous culture, to live openly for God. And they live a life that bore testimony to the Lord. Daniel lived a life of faith. Daniel lived a life of prayer. Daniel lived a life of courage. Daniel lived a life of consistency. Without this purpose of heart, and everything included in that purpose of heart, Daniel would have slid into Babylonian culture. Daniel would have become lost in Babylonian culture. And this is where many of God's people are today. They have slid into a godless culture. They have become part of a godless culture. Without this purpose of heart, Daniel would have done the same thing. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. And in the 43 years of Nebuchadnezzar, 43 years Nebuchadnezzar reigned. And in those 43 years, for the most part, it was a time of proud defiance of God. They were times of idolatry, times of blasphemy, times of heresy, times of hostility for God. And there's Daniel, and no doubt many others as well. He evidenced God in his life. During the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Daniel evidenced God in his life. Daniel persevered chapter 5, which would have been some 60 plus years into the captivity, Daniel still serving God. Daniel still has a purpose within his heart. Daniel still evidenced God in his life. 60 some years living in a godless culture, and Daniel is still separate. Separated. Daniel is still living for God. We're not going to take the time, but you read through chapter 5. And it was a time of idolatry. It was a time of great irreverence. Belshazzar, who is now the king, Belshazzar is holding a drunken party. There are women. They are toasting the gods of Babylon. It was a time of idolatry. It was a time of irreverence. Belshazzar called for the vessels that had been taken out of the temple of God and poured in the wine of Babylon and toasted the false gods of Babylon. It was a time of great irreverence. It was a time of blasphemy. It was a time of contempt for God. It was a time of defiance toward God. It was a time of desecration. It was a time of pride. It was a time of ignorance. Now, I believe that God saved Nebuchadnezzar. And we read here in Daniel chapter 5 that Belshazzar knew of this, but he ignored what he knew. It was a time of ignorance. It was a time of drunkenness. It was a time of indulgence. It was a time of immorality. It was a time of permissiveness. It was a time of lewdness. A time of perversion. And as they raised the vessels from the temple of God, filled those vessels with wine, and toasted the gods of Babylon, it was a time of mockery. And it was a time of profanity. These things, no doubt, had only increased since the days of Nebuchadnezzar. But they pretty much describe our culture today. But Daniel, 60 plus years, he's been in Babylonian captivity. 60 plus years, he's lived in a godless society. He's still serving God. Daniel was not at this party. I doubt if Daniel was even invited. They knew better. They knew better. It ought to cause you to search your heart what you might be invited to. People ought to know better than even to ask. But it was in the midst of such a sinful culture. Remember, as Belshazzar is holding his drunken feast, there appeared the hand of a man writing on the wall. This greatly upset Belshazzar. I mean, filled him with fear. He called the astrologers. He had called the wise men of his day to come and to interpret what the message meant. And they could not. And the world still does not have the answer. But then the queen, she said, Belshazzar, there's a man by the name of Daniel, in whom the spirit of the gods, she made a mistake there in calling the spirit of the gods, but we know what she meant. in whom the Spirit of the Lord is. And he is of excellent spirit. 60-some years in Babylonian culture. And there is Daniel, still filled with the Spirit of God. There is Daniel, still possessing an excellent spirit. And still recognized by the ungodly as a man who is different. All goes back to verse 8 of chapter 1. Daniel purposed in his heart he would not defile himself. And may I just throw this in? Daniel chapter 5. The message was to Belshazzar, your days are numbered. Lost friend, your days are numbered. The second point of that message was you've fallen short. You don't measure up. And the third point of that message was judgment. You know, there are a lot of folks today, life is just a big party. But just like with Belshazzar, one day the party's going to be over. One day the party's going to end. And then what are you going to do? In chapter 6, Babylon has been conquered. Darius is set over the kingdom. Daniel just keeps serving God. And he just keeps on prospering. God just keeps on honoring him. Daniel, those in the government of Darius sought to bring down Daniel. They couldn't find any fault in him. And they said, the only thing we're going to be able to accuse Daniel of is something concerning his God. So they persuaded Darius to sign a decree that for 30 days, no one could ask a petition except of the king. They did this because they knew that Daniel was a man of prayer. And they knew that if they got Darius to sign such a decree, that that would not stop Daniel from praying. And that then they could bring accusation against Daniel. Notice in chapter 6, verse 9, wherefore King Darius signed the writing and the decree. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. 60-plus years living in a godless culture. And Daniel every single day fell to his knees and prayed. He was a man of God living in a godless culture. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before God. He was still living a God-evident life. Daniel, because of this, Darius reluctantly threw him into the lion's den. And God miraculously spared Daniel. And he again prospered. Chapter 9. It's now been 70 years since the captivity. In verse 3, Daniel says, I set my face unto the Lord God to seek by prayer and supplications with fasting and sackcloth and ashes. And I prayed unto the Lord my God. 70 years living in a God-hating culture. And Daniel still has God stirring his heart. Still has a reverence for God. Still has a passion for the Lord. He's still determined. 70 years. And he's still praying. He's still seeking the Lord. He's still trusting the Lord. He's still cleaving to the Lord. Still living a God-evident life. Daniel, throughout 70 years, in a God-despising culture, remained separate. He remained clean. He remained holy. He remained right. He remained unshakable. He remained valiant and steadfast and determined. 70 years. And he was not swayed by a godless culture. That brings us to the application to ourselves. Just as Nebuchadnezzar had a program and an agenda to entice and to develop an appetite for Babylonian culture amongst these Hebrew captives, so there is an all-out effort today to develop an appetite amongst the people of God for a godless culture. There are those who come in the Home Baptist Church every Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night who cannot worship God because they have an appetite for a godless culture. Just as Nebuchadnezzar sought to fill the minds of the Hebrew captives with Babylonian philosophy, with Babylonian religion. This was done in an attempt to reprogram their thinking to align with Babylonian thinking. And it is scary today how much of the thinking of God's people is in line with a godless, idolatrous, blasphemous, filthy, vile culture. Many have already been reprogrammed. There are some sitting here right now, you have already been reprogrammed. Just as Nebuchadnezzar sought to teach the Hebrew captives a new language, as we've already mentioned, so the world today is pushing a new language. And many have learned the language. Many are fluent. Just as Nebuchadnezzar sought to get these Hebrew captives to identify with Babylonian culture, so there is an all-out attempt today to get God's people to identify. To get God's people to identify with a godless culture. To get God's people to identify with the humanistic and the immoral and the immodest and the permissive. We live in a culture where the dysfunctional is the norm. And many of God's people have identified with that culture. And they haven't left the church, many of them. No, they are agents. They are agents of a godless culture. Oh, we wish they'd either get right or leave. But they're still here as agents of the devil. as agents of a godless culture. And they will plant their seed. I leave these individuals with God. Just as Nebuchadnezzar sought to get the Hebrew captives to accept and to embrace Babylonian culture, so there is an all-out effort to get the very people of God to accept and to embrace homosexuality. Well, I don't know of anybody in the church that embraces homosexuality. Perhaps there isn't. I sure hope not. Give it some time, my friend. It'll happen. Because there was a time when many other things weren't embraced that are embraced today. Oh, they would never embrace that. Give it some time. Just wait till one of their sons or their daughters. I'm telling you, it's coming. It's coming. Nebuchadnezzar, just like the world today, trying to get us to embrace and to accept adultery and fornication and alcohol and drugs. And many are more accepting and embracing of a culture of godlessness and wickedness than they are of God. There are some sitting here right now, you embrace a godless culture more than you embrace God. Many have been duped into believing that if the government legalizes something, then it's okay. You better stop and think about some things the government has legalized. And it doesn't make it okay. And if you think it is okay, you have been duped by a godless culture. And oh God, help us when God's people start to defend that which is wicked and evil. And we're there. We're there. This world is evil. This world is filthy. It's vile. And its way of life is aimed at captivating God's people. And we, as God's people, must do what Daniel did. We must not be taken up with the thinking, with the ways, with the idols, with the ambition, with the opinions and the aims and the influence of a God-despising culture. Live in a day when many who profess God, they've been swallowed up with the world's twisted and perverted fantasies, philosophies, and ideas. Even abortion is accepted by some of God's people. You might be surprised at how many in the Lord's churches have murdered one of their own. Might surprise you. We live in a terrible time. We live in a day when many who profess God have been swallowed up by the world's twisted and perverted fantasies, philosophies, and ideas. Live in a time when God's people and the Lord's churches are expected to apologize for convictions based upon biblical principles. Home Baptist Church has no need to apologize for God-based convictions. And we must never be felt that we have to apologize for what we believe. I'm not going to apologize to my children. I'm not going to apologize to my parents, my grandparents, or anybody for what I believe. Our homes, our marriages, our churches, and our lives are being ransacked and loot it. And it is time for God's people. It is time for the people of God to purpose in their heart that they're not going to be defiled with a godless culture. It is time for God's people to resolve and to have a determination for God. As for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord. It doesn't matter what anybody else does as far as what we do. And all the problems of life, and all the varying circumstances, and all the varying situations, and all the temptations and the difficulties and the trials, and in the midst of opposing forces and in the midst of hindrances, we need to determine in our hearts that we're not going to do that which makes us unclean and pollutes our lives. We're not going to do that which makes the church unclean and pollutes the church. We're not going to do that which makes our homes and our marriages and our families unclean. We're going to purpose within our hearts. We must purpose in our hearts that God is the preeminent one. He is preeminent over family. He is preeminent over friends. He is preeminent over job. He is preeminent over pleasures. He is preeminent over everything. Oh, that we would have a people that would purpose in their hearts, that we're going to live our lives to the honor and to the glory of the one who gave himself for us and saved our soul. Like Daniel, we need to commit ourselves absolutely, positively, everywhere and always, to have a clearly defined purpose for God. There are many allurements in the world today. And it's sad, but all of us, to one degree or another, have been taken with a godless culture. We have adopted some of the practices of a godless culture. But amid all the allurements, amid all the enticements of a godless age, God's glory needs to be our aim. I just want to glorify God. God's glory needs to be our goal. God's glory needs to be our ambition and our determination and our resolve and our commitment. 70 years, Daniel lived in a godless culture. For 70 years in that culture, Daniel remained true to his God. 70 years in that culture, and Daniel did not compromise with the enemy. And may I say today, there is a difference. If someone is ignorant, doesn't know truth, you can talk to them, you can hope to minister to them. But when that individual begins to attack what this book teaches and begins to attack what the church stands for based upon this book, my friend, that is an enemy. That is an enemy. And they need to be separated from. Well, it's my son, it's my daughter, it's my parent. It doesn't matter.
They are an enemy. And it is pitiful today that Home Baptist Church has many enemies. Some of them are related to y'all. We have many enemies. And what a shame when members of Home Baptist Church will go out and tell the enemy what's going on. Seems to me you're also an agent, if that be the case. God help us today to stand. God help us to be resolved to serve God. We need to be a people who are going to stand. Count the cost. It may cost you dearly, but you won't lose a thing. You really won't lose a thing. What did Daniel lose? Nothing. What did Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego lose in the furnace? Nothing. God help us today to have some conviction. Young people, you need some conviction. You need to believe something. Don't just take mom and dad's word. Believe. Believe what the book says. Get some conviction. And stand. And don't apologize for conviction. Don't ever be made to feel that you need to apologize for conviction. If the thought even crosses my mind that I need to apologize for conviction, I need to repent right there. There's no need. God help us today. Brother Larry, if you'd come.